And welcome back. As we begin the program tonight, let me remind all of you that people are being killed, butchered, slaughtered, massacred right now by the Zionist Israeli army in the Gaza city area and in Gaza in general. People are dying at this moment, and they've been dying for the last almost 10 days now. Actually, they've been dying for many, many years, over 60, if you become realistic about this whole thing. My first guest tonight is, in my opinion, one of the world's premier, if not preeminent, revisionist historians. He is an extraordinary journalist and a very brave and courageous man and a great American patriot. His name is Michael Hoffman. He is making a return visit tonight after far too long away from this program. He has a book that many of you may have heard about. If you haven't, let me tell you about it. It is 1,100 pages long. It is hardcover. It is entitled Judaism Discovered. It has been banned by Amazon.com. Amazon pressured by a rabbi to stop all sales of the book. So we would look to you folks to help move sales along and pay close attention this hour. We're going to hear a lot of very interesting and important things from Michael Hoffman. Let me read a little bit from his homepage about the book because it is important. Judaism Discovered differs from virtually all the writing on this subject, which has preceded it in the past 100 years. It does this by means of empiric and strictly factual discovery of Judaism's deepest operational and spiritual secrets, and in particular, Judaism's extremely circumspect epistemology of concealment. Let me impart to you a great secret. Whoever hates Judaics perpetuates the role and the rule of the rabbis. This secret is documented and explained in my book. I have sought to break new ground and to anticipate the counter-arguments of rabbinic and Judeo-Christian critics. It has been my objective to craft Judaism Discovered so that there is no possibility of a rational refutation of it. While it's true that the book's evidence and arguments can be twisted, misrepresented, and demonized with the usual underhanded ADL-style smears and falsification, the information in Judaism Discovered cannot be easily disarmed because much of it pertains to epistemology, viz., Judaism's knowledge of itself, and the ways in which it responds to discovery. Welcome back to the program, Michael.
Thank you, Jeff. It's good to be here.
You're a busy man.
Yes, I am.
We have up at the guest section at Rents.com under Michael's name. His name goes right to his homepage. And I've also posted the two-part review done by Brother Nathaniel Kapner. And they're very good reviews. And at the bottom of each, we'll tell you how to get this book. Again, it's 1,100 pages. It is a book literally unprecedented in modern history, and I don't think we'll see another like it. In general, Michael, how has the book been received by honest critics?
Well, it's really difficult to gauge the response because, in general, it's been blacked out in the sphere of the printed word and publications that are what you would call hard copy.
Yeah.
Online, the response has been very good, and in general, the sales have been strong in spite of the fact that there's been a blackout in effect, because largely what happens is the sales, I think, are based on word of mouth. A person gets the book, they find that it meets their expectations, and they then notify other people. It's kind of like a good carpenter in a local town who doesn't do any advertising, but he's always busy, because the work is considered to be adequate and people regard him as honest. And I think the same thing has happened to my book, Judaism Discovered.
That's a very, very wisely put way to say it all. This, in a way, is your book is rather like the Mearsheimer and Walt book, except yours has been banned. This at least got published. Both raise extremely interesting, fascinating, and relevant, if not, well, life-depending information. I mean, we've got to understand this thing because right now, as we look at the world, we see no longer a stealth or background effort. This is an in-your-face effort now by the New World Order led by World Zionism to literally take control of most of the so-called civilized world. We have to understand what's happening. We must understand the enemy. Anyone who slaughters and massacres people, controls nations, starts world wars, finances both sides, I could go on for hours, is the enemy of peace, the enemy of freedom, of enlightenment. And this species is going to fail unless we understand what is happening to it and how it has been co-opted and how these United States, these formerly United States have been taken over literally and are now the cash cow of world Zionism. And I don't mind telling you that. I've been telling you that for many years. And I don't know if you agree with all that or not, Michael, but have at it.
Well, my own concern, of course, is Orthodox Judaism and the role that it's playing both in the Holocaust in Gaza and in many other spheres of its influence. And we could begin with I think, what is a hidden component in the war on the Palestinians, because I find that most of the rhetoric that's been generated in favor of the Palestinians is largely futile. As an observer of this scene since at least the late 1970s, I'm aware of how many massacres and war crimes the Israelis have perpetrated, and I'm also aware of the thin margin of people who protest these massacres. But I think the reason why we don't get anywhere with our protests and with our activism is because we're only dealing with symptoms and we're not getting to the root. And the root of the problem is actually Orthodox Judaism. A lot of people believe that Zionism and Orthodox Judaism are inimical to one another, but actually they were synthesized by a remarkable figure in the 19th century who I study in my book, Moses Hess. And Moses Hess was someone that Karl Marx called my communist rabbi. And Hess was both a Zionist and a Talmudist and a communist, all in one. So he took the Hegelian process and he synthesized these two supposedly opposing theses of Zionism and Orthodox Judaism and reconciled them in a model which was actually adopted beginning in the late 19th and early 20th century, and which we're still seeing today as the aptly named Rabbi Kook developed what's known as religious Zionism in the 20th century in the Israeli state. Mm-hmm. But the roots of the violence that we're seeing, the grotesque contempt for the Palestinian people, is in Orthodox Judaism. And Orthodox Judaism has had an enormous influence over the Zionist state, because Zionism is something like a shadow or a reverberation of Orthodox Judaism, so that there are certainly plenty of secular Zionists who may say that they don't follow the Talmud and they don't care very much about rabbis, but at the same time, as a process of osmosis, of being part of the culture and of the tradition, they have picked up this Talmudic racism. And until Arabs and Muslims and Christians and everyone who's concerned about justice in the Middle East begins to scrutinize the religion of Orthodox Judaism rather than falling for the line that it's an Old Testament religion of justice, even if it may be somewhat harsh or pharisaical, until we do that, we're going to continue to have a missing element in this war on the Palestinians, who are basically being treated as crap. And when I look at what's happening in Gaza now, we can see that their life is extraordinarily devalued. If the shoe was on the other foot and hundreds of Israeli civilians were dead and four or five Palestinians were dead as a result of rocket fire, the entire West would be up in arms. What is the disparity? There's more to this than simply the fact that they control Congress or that they have an inordinate influence over the media. The roots are in the rabbinic text of Orthodox Judaism for this contempt for people that they see as subhuman.
They do see them as subhuman. What was the comment by one former Israeli prime minister, I believe, that all the Palestinians, maybe he said all the Arabs in the world, aren't worth one Zionist, Jewish fingernail?
Yes, that was at the funeral of Baruch Goldstein, the man who slaughtered 40 Palestinians in 1994, at the Cave of the Patriarchs. And what's interesting in that particular case is how little we have any context for what's going on in Palestine and in the Israeli state right now, because the media seldom identifies the players in this action. They don't provide context. They don't provide background. So, for example, right now, one of the main players is Ehud Barak as the defense chief,
right,
who, along with the current rulers of the Israeli regime, is initiating this. But what about Barak's background? He has a background in mass murder. It isn't that we can't accept the storyline that suddenly he became livid with rage at rocket fire and decided to nobly retaliate. In fact, as far back as 1994, more Palestinians died protesting the mass murder by Baruch Goldstein in the wake of his slaughter in early 1994, then were killed at the mosque. And the slaughterer of those Palestinians was none other than Ehud Barak. Why hasn't the media supplied us with this context?
Well, let's take a break. The answer is fairly obvious, because the media is Zionist-owned and controlled for the most part. As Michael said, the printed word now is no longer free here. It is a propaganda tool. And when you read some of the apologist material that is being proffered as journalism to the American public, you want to just retch. It's no longer objective. It's no longer journalism. It is mind manipulation. Be right back. The what they call coverage of the war. First of all, it's not coverage of a war. And secondly, it's not a war. This is a massacre, which has been, by the way, in the plans, if you've been watching the stories at Rents.com, and being planned for over apparently a year and a half. This has been a very high priority issue with the Zionist Israeli government. And let's give credit to many Jews, not only in Israel, but around the world, who are protesting. A number of them joined in the anti-massacre protest in Toronto the other day. So there are good people of all faiths and all religions who can step aside and look at this as a human issue. These people are being liquidated, and it's quite clear that the ultimate plan for Gaza City is probably not too dissimilar from that which the United States visited upon Fallujah. And we do need to remember that while this country was killing 1.5 million Iraqis under the Bush-Cheney-Halliburton regime, the media here, of course, essentially looked the other way. 1.5 million people died in the Holocaust there. Granted, the number of Palestinians is quite small compared to that. Death is death. This program has always been an equal opportunity mourner. We condemn death and violence. And beyond that, we condemn evil in whatever form it takes. Michael, go ahead, please.
Well, I wanted to begin with the point that I mentioned before we broke for the commercial break, that the roots of Israeli violence are in the rabbinic text. And the most infamous of those texts is found in the saying of Rabbi Shimon ben Yohei, which is, Tov Shiv Goyim Harav, even the best of the Gentiles should all be killed.
Is this Talmudism, so to speak, to help our listeners understand, or is this Torah? What is this?
Well, they call it Torah, but actually there's the Torah that they're referring to is the oral Torah, and it's no Torah at all. It's the traditions of men, as Jesus clearly stated, that and as Isaiah stated, and as all the great prophets, Isaiah talked about those who are dealers who mix the wine with the water. And here he was talking about the elders who are in the habit of mingling a water tradition with the commands of God. And one of the confusions, I think, is that people who imagine that Israeli violence is motivated by the Old Testament. The Old Testament is anti-Israel, and Rabbinic Judaism is anti-Old Testament. Rabbinic Judaism defames Noah. It defames Abraham. It defames Isaiah. And if we have enough time, I will give you the specifics of those. But in this case, I'm talking about the Talmud, and really one of the founders, the foundational elders of Judaism, Rabbi Shimon ben Yohei, who has a holiday dedicated to him in the Israeli state.
And again, he believed that all non-Jews were not worthy of life, basically.
Exactly. They should be exterminated. And once a year, Judaics around the world gather in the Israeli state for what's called Lag BaOmer, which celebrates his birth. And there are a lot of nonsensical miracle stories associated with him. I'll just give you one very quickly. The Talmud says that during his lifetime, Rabbi Ben Shohei's lifetime, a rainbow never appeared on earth. God didn't need to show the rainbow while Rabbi Ben Yohei was alive because the rabbi was so great a person.
Great
a person that his own righteousness protected the whole world and God's rainbow was not needed. And that's from the Jerusalem Talmud, Berakos 9:1. And so here we see not only an extermination warrant for genocide, but we also see this incredible egomania, which actually trumps God's creation. And if we have time, I will endeavor to document the fact that it trumps God himself. So this is an extra Old Testament religion. It's a man-made religion. Well, the Ben Yohei statement is fairly notorious, but in my book I go into far more recondite material. For example, from the Babylonian Talmud Sanhedrin 58b, when a non-Jew strikes a Jew, it's as if he's striking the divine presence itself. And there's also something about mass murder as a mystical technique for the attainment of ecstasy and personal experience of the divine. This came out after the 1994 Hebron massacre by the aforementioned Baruch Goldstein, when Rabbi Yitzhak Ginsburg, who's of the Chabad Lubavitch group, and he wrote a tract called Baruch HaGever, which treats atrocity as a mystical technique for the attainment of unmediated, ecstatic, and personal experience of the divine.
So they get off on genocide.
They get off on genocide, and this is, you were mentioning how this is increasingly in the open. It's in the open, but because we live in the United States of amnesia, we don't have these things brought to our attention. I'll give you an example. More than 20 years ago, Jeff, as you recall, the black leader Louis Farrakhan termed Judaism a gutter religion, and that was 20 years ago. Now, his remark has been recalled and condemned by the media almost constantly ever since. It was even an issue in the Democrats' presidential candidates debate last February when moderator the late Tim Russert stated to Barack Obama, quote, "The problem some voters may have is, as you know, Reverend Farrakhan called Judaism a gutter religion." So here's Russert bringing up an ancient statement from Louis Farrakhan of 20 years vintage. But now watch this. During a sermon over the 2001 Passover holiday, just 7 years ago, the Shas party, a major Israeli party, their rabbi, Obadiah Yosef, exclaimed, quote, "May the holy name visit retribution on the Arab heads, cause their seed to be lost, and annihilate them. It is forbidden to have pity on them. We should give them missiles with relish. Annihilate these damnable ones." End quote. Jeff, who brings this up nowadays? Who confronts the Israelis with these statements? Rabbi David Batsri, director of the Magen David Yeshiva in Jerusalem, said, and I quote, "The nation of Israel is pure, and the Arabs are a nation of donkeys. They are an evil disaster, an evil devil, and a nasty affliction. The Arabs are donkeys and beasts. They are endowed with true filthiness. There is pure and there is impure, and they are impure." Now, that's from March 21st, 2006.
Wow. All right. Stand by right there, Michael. We'll come right back. My guest, Michael Hoffman. Researcher, historian, scholar, Michael Hoffman. His book, Judaism Discovered, a True Landmark of Our Times. 1,100 pages hardback. You can go to his website, revisionisthistory.org. I don't call these people revisionist historians, I call them revisionist scholars just as well. You can look in guests and find reviews of the book. It is monumental. Keep in mind that the power that is seeking to dominate has forced Amazon to ban sales of the book, so we would urge all of you to support Michael Hoffman, buy a copy of the book, and certainly spread the word around if you find it something that you enjoy and are informed by. And I don't know how you can't, or you wouldn't be listening to this program. The issue of I don't know what label to use. It is tricky, and that's part of the problem. We'll just call it Zionist Israeli slaughter. It goes back a long, long way, and we are seeing the latest example of this. And I don't know exactly how to quantify it, because there are organizations like Jews Against Zionism who are adamantly opposed to Zionism. I don't think Israel should exist at all. And we can go on to that other canard, of course, about Ahmadinejad and his alleged statement, which he never made, that Israel should be wiped off the map in a physical sense. He didn't mean that. But something else I'm looking for here. Here it is. I'll get to it in just a minute. Anyway, go ahead, Michael. You made some very good points there. And by the way, all of this Talmudism, many Jews say they don't know about the Talmud. They weren't taught about these incredibly arrogant and genocidal views, that they know nothing about it, really, that it's all old history. Others on the Internet, of course, try to rewrite the Talmudic quotations in a much more sanguine fashion to make them seem superfluous, and they claim people have misinterpreted them from the old language. Not true. There are too many accurate and scholarly definitive translations around. Please go ahead.
Before I get into that, I just wanted to mention you brought up the president of Iran and the attribution to him, which, as you say, is erroneous, that he wanted to wipe the state of the Israeli out of existence. But again, this is notorious, like Farrakhan's statement. How many people know that the Israeli deputy defense minister, as recently as February 29, 2008, said that there should be a Holocaust of Palestinians in Gaza? That was Matan Vilnai. He said they should be Shoah, S-H-O-A-H. Steve Erlinger points out the Hebrew word Shoah means catastrophe or Holocaust,
right,
and is rarely used for anything other than extermination.
He knew what was coming, it sounds like to me.
He knew what he was coming. He makes the statement, but you see, this is how the Israelis are protected from the consequences of their exterminating racism by the Western media, even as their critics, like Farrakhan, are eternally stigmatized. Now, as far as the Talmud being little known among Judaics, it depends on what population, what ethnicity, what geographical area you're talking about. In the United States, the majority of Judaics identify with a liberal version called Reform Judaism, and it's true, it largely is not literate in the Talmudic text. However, like Zionism, it has inherited, through a process of osmosis, as the cultural patrimony of the Talmud itself, it has inherited the racism and the ethnocentricity, and if it didn't, then we wouldn't see Congress being controlled in the way it is and advocating war against the Palestinians. But nonetheless, it's quite true that their majority of American Judaics do not have a close familiarity with the Talmud. However, at the same time, many of these people are very proud of the Talmud. They're proud of their heritage, and even if they have a foggy notion of it, at the same time, they say that it is a part of the tradition of their persecuted ancestors, and therefore it's worth preserving. So they have kind of a extra cerebral nostalgia for the Talmud. Now, in the Israeli state, where Orthodox Judaism has enormously more power and position as opposed to its role here in the United States, where, as I said, Reform Judaism has far more adherents. Although that's changing as liberal Judaics contracept themselves out of existence and Orthodox Judaic populations continue to grow.
Important point, Michael. Yeah.
I'd also like to briefly address the idea of Judaics against Zionism. I think that where people are secular Judaics, where they are not attached to the Talmud or adherents of Orthodox Judaism, then I think that that can be sincere. However, when you have groups like the Neturei Karta and other Talmudic followers who claim to be opposed to the Israeli project for world supremacy, then I think this is where people are really being beguiled, because they're not understanding the earlier and older model of Talmudic conquest. We have to go all the way back to Bar Kokhba and his failed revolt. Originally, the Judaics, and at that time they were not, as I call them, Judaics today, because that's my way of signaling that they're counterfeit Jews, and not the vast majority of them are not actually today descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, whereas, of course, in the first century they were. And so the Jews of that era tried violence, and they tried violent resistance, and they were so thoroughly crushed in the Bar Kokhba revolt that if you read the rabbinic text, you will see that they decided to advance their cause through stealth, through guile, and through projecting these decoy texts in the Talmud, which you made reference to. There are humanitarian texts there, and there are nice brotherhood-sounding texts, but there are also hermeneutic excursuses which indicate to those who are initiated into the rabbinic textual exegesis that these are decoy texts put there for the benefit and consumption of the goyim. And if we're good fruit inspectors, we'll find out that the fruits of the Talmud are bad and they're racist. So that sort of undercuts at a very initial level the fact that these are just superficial texts that were placed there for the benefit of the goyim. But in terms of this competition between two differing interpretations, the Nutare Karta and other Talmudic Judaics like them represent the old school, that Bar Kokhba was crushed by a Gentile military power as represented by Rome. And so it's not really sanguine for us to proceed along the Bar Kokhba model. But once Zionism and then religious Zionism, Talmudic Zionism emerged, as I mentioned with Rabbi Kook and other theoreticians in the 20th century, it was decided that we had entered the era where Judaism could use violence to advance its cause. So we're talking about a difference in tactics, but the overall contempt for the Gentiles and the belief that Gentiles do not have a soul that is equivalent to Judaics, which is the root of all this of all of these problems in Judaism.
When we come back, Michael, I want to talk about this this elitism, this arrogance, this chosen people attitude and ethos that permeates far too much of this planet in terms of its Jewish population.
They have the Neshama HaElona. Yes, I'd be glad to talk about that.
In just a minute with Michael Hoffman. Okay, and we're back with Michael Hoffman. I urge you to get a copy of his book. It is truly a monumental work. As many of you know, the effort by organized Zionism to force Jews to Israel was rather ruthless, to put it mildly. Jews living in surrounding Arab nations were not attacked by Arabs at all. The Mossad went in and attacked Jews, killed many of them, forced them to move to Israel. In fact, this kind of pressure still exists today. It's a very complicated issue. But above and beyond all of that is this unbelievable, ungodly arrogance that these people, and I'm not talking about many of you Jews out there who are absolutely opposed to this as we are. I'm talking about people who on this planet think that their worth as human beings absolutely subjugates that of any other living life form, that they are it. And other life, goyim, in fact, is essentially just a servant class. It's like a caste system in India, but even worse than that. Go ahead, Michael, please.
Yes, well, What you're really talking about is the Neshama Ha'elona, which is the soul of a fully human being. And according to the rabbinic text, only a Jew would possess that status. So the rest of us are lacking this nefesh status. And that's why we can be killed. That's why Christians under Bolshevism and Palestinian and Lebanese Arabs under the Israeli military, those who have been labeled in this way, they can be killed. Let's go over to the Babylonian Talmud at Bava Metzia 114b. Only you, the members of the Jewish people, are called men, but non-Jews are not called men. Now, the ADL and some of these other hysterical apologist groups will say that that's a made-up quote or it's taken out of context. I reproduced the original Aramaic on page 470 of my book for that quotation. We have dozens of others which give credence to this and document the fact that there is a huge disparity. You know, Jeff, the test of any law is the principle of universality. It's the feature of any law code worth anything, and that is whether we apply to ourselves what we apply to others. And the great defect of Orthodox Judaism and all of its tributaries, which are offshoots of it, Zionism and these other ideologies, is that they don't do this. They have one law for the elite themselves and another law for the rest of us. And that's at the root of what we see happening in Gaza, because otherwise it's almost unexplainable the contemptuous disregard and dismissal of, as you say, it's not a war, it's a massacre, and this disregard for it in the West. Now, in the Third World, of course, it's a burning issue, and Al Jazeera and other independent media outlets have done a pretty good job of bringing this to the attention of the public. For Westerners, it's not an issue. And it really, again, it comes back to the religion of Judaism, which is lacking in the principle of universality. It says that God is sublimated to the rabbis, the Gentiles are sublimated to the rabbis, and therefore, we're all just more or less sitting ducks for them. And also the idea that there's going to be peace in the Middle East, this is really a chimera, because Judaism teaches that anyone who returns the land of Eretz Israel, as they call it, of Greater Israel, to the Gentiles, is in fact a din rodef, which is a pursuer. And a din rodef is someone who can be killed immediately. The entire nation of Palestinians have been classified en masse as din rodef, because from a halakhic point of view, that means from the point of view of rabbinic law, the man-made Talmudic-based law, a din rodef is anyone who returns the land of Palestine to the Palestinians, and they can be killed. And it's sort of a kind of a preventive attack. Apologists say is that a rodef is someone who's coming to kill you, so you kill him first. But in fact, the actual definition of a rodef is, for example, a tipster who identifies a Judaic child molester to the police.
Mm-hmm.
An unborn baby can be aborted because it's seen as pursuing its mother. Or an Israeli prime minister like Yitzhak Rabin, who signs the Oslo Accord. All of these people were regarded as rodefs. And, I could give you a quotation after quotation from Shaul Mofaz, from Rabbi Druckmann in the Israeli state, that backs all of this up, that you can kill non-Jewish civilians. This was a Talmudic edict that was issued by Druckmann. And he's not some marginal crazy in the Israeli state. He has a tremendous prestige there. And he says that the Israeli army should never hesitate to kill non-Jewish civilians in order to save Jewish lives. He even quoted a Talmudic edict from the ancient Rabbi Akiva, which states, "Our lives come first." And, of course, Israeli soldiers and officers, as even the newspaper Haaretz admitted, are influenced by these halakhic ethical commandments in terms of this is how they behave towards the subject peoples. So we know there was a Nazi ideology. People have been able to trace the contempt that Hitler had for Slavs and for Judaics, and yet very few people are allowed to come into the marketplace of ideas and raise trail of supremacist logic and the rationale for mass murder back to the Talmudic text. Until we do that, until we have the courage and scholarship to do it, we're going to be running in circles, chasing our tails with a lot of rhetoric condemning Israeli aggression, and the American people are almost oblivious to it. But if a lot of these Christians could understand that Judaism is an anti-Old Testament religion that defames Abraham, that says that Abraham was filled with lust, that says that Noah was a drunk, that says that Isaiah, the prophet Isaiah, deserved to be killed and, in fact, was killed by the followers of the oral tradition, because Isaiah had made the mistake of saying that Israel has unclean lips. And for that, the Talmud says that he was quite rightly killed. And this is when Jesus says, if you recall, he says that you are witnesses against yourselves. This is obviously a reference to Jesus' knowledge of the oral law, where in the oral law, which came to be written down after they crucified the Messiah of Israel, and they became even more corrupt, and then they committed the oral law.
Okay, let me switch a little bit on this. It is also worth noting that there are approximately 35 million American Christians who identify with Zionism, in fact, call themselves Christian Zionists. That's a pretty scary number. But beyond that, this then helps those of us who study history, especially the last century, grasp the reason, perhaps, behind the starting of two world wars by financiers from Wall Street and others who were in high positions. They don't, and I'm going to go back to what you said earlier, that this ecstatic embracing of the mass deaths of non-Jews is part and parcel of why over 100 million people died in the last century. And if you trace the financing of World War I and World War II, in fact, in World War II, as you well know, I think, Prescott Bush, the grandfather of the village idiot, was involved in financing the Germans. The Wall Street bankers were involved with financing both sides. We have the Bolshevik Jewish element in the Soviet Union. This whole mass execution of humanity is something sought after and reveled in by a certain portion of these very people you're talking about.
And it all depends on an intellectual hoax, because, as I said about the anti-biblical nature of Judaism, and then you have these characters inside Judaism. I'll give you an example, Rabbi Moses Maimonides, who has tremendous prestige in the Christian world. He's considered a sober and prudent judge, and someone who's greatly admired by Western intellectuals, both liberal and conservative. And yet, in his more or less esoteric teachings, for example, in Avodat Kovakim, chapter 10, he says, show no mercy to a non-Jew. And this is someone, and he also says that Christians should be killed. This is someone who is being held up to us as a great paradigm of Judaism. And if we had more time, Jeff, I would have gone into the Gezara Shava, which is this very strange hermeneutical principle for nullifying the Old Testament. It's woven through the Talmudic text, and a lot of people believe, because rabbis have mastery of languages, and of course they're often very voluble and articulate, mm-hmm. that they think that that's a stand-in for genuine biblical erudition. And in fact, Judaism is a trap, as Jesus pointed out, for confusing people into this diabolical system where they actually know less about the Old Testament than a good, solid Christian scholar would, because they're constantly deceiving themselves in order to mislead the Judaic people, who, as I try to point out in my book, and I think it's also been a thread that you've pursued, are the greatest victims of Judaism. The first and greatest victims of Judaism are the Judaics themselves, who are trapped inside the stultifying and sadistic system.
Absolutely correct. Would you like to come back?
Surely.
Well, I've got openings on the 13th and 14th. Why don't you let me know if either one of those will work for you in the next day or two, and we'll have you back. I'd love to continue the conversation, Michael.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff. It's been good to be here.
It's been extraordinary. My guest has been Michael Hoffman. His book is Judaism Discovered, available at his website of revisionisthistory.org, 1,100 pages, one of the truly most important books of our time, and in essence a key to helping all of us understand what's going on around us and where we are headed. A final comment from you, Michael, 30 seconds.
I guess my final comment would be to make people aware of this patriot issue, of this Israeli issue, of the anti-Semitism issue, by going back to a story in the Old Testament, which is when the prophet Elijah faced off against King Ahab. What happened? King Ahab accused Elijah of being anti-Israel. The corrupt, wicked king used the patriot card and used the anti-Semitic card to accuse a great prophet of being anti-Israel. Let us not fear to have that label attached to us when we're telling the truth.
Very good. Thank you, Michael. I look forward to our next conversation.
Same here. Thanks, Jeff.
Good night. Michael Hoffman, extraordinary effort to produce a book of this magnitude, and by virtue of its being blacklisted, you know it's worthy. Be right back.